This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Monday, and sitting in for Brent for the next couple of days is the recently reinstated as president of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, TJ Sullivan, everybody.
Yeah, hey! That's a wild applause. It's like the first time opening up at the Apollo. It's been crazy. I'm glad to be able to be back in here for Brent. A lot of people don't know this, but Brent has got a life-size portrait of Ernest Borgnine tattooed on his back. And he's getting it removed. So
well, thank God.
Takes a couple of days. Well, a lot of people don't know who Ernest Borgnine is anymore, and so
I actually do. So that's not a visual I needed. Thank you.
Sorry. Well, I mean, Brent, you know, God bless him. He's going to go take that thing off. So that's good.
He's
so.
Actually out to recruiting airline service to Salem.
Oh,
he's courting is what he's doing.
Oh, okay.
He's saying we've got our package together. What do you think?
Yeah.
Will you come?
Yes,
that's what he's hoping for.
There's a lot of good momentum around that. We're really close. We need $1 million. We feel like to go and approach airlines with to get them to consider Salem.
Correct.
And we're right around $750,000 right now, which is pretty good. Personally, I think this is going to be the biggest economic driver to happen to our community in the last 50 years. This is a game changer for Salem. So if you're out there and you're listening and you're thinking, gosh, it would be awesome. I just flew to Cincinnati and I got home at 2 a.m. And that drive from the Portland airport to Salem sucks at 2 a.m. But I was thankful that it wasn't at 2 p.m.
Yes.
Because that drive would have been 2.5 hours of just gridlock, and it's only going to get worse. So if you're out there, you might consider making a pledge, $1,000 pledge to the campaign. If you call the station, get in touch with Brent. Brent will get you everything that you need to know. But you can go to flysle.com. I'm sure Brent's mentioned that a bunch of times.
Yes. There's also a link on our homepage
KYKN.com
as well.
Perfect. You guys are set up.
Hey, you betcha.
Well, good luck to Brent in that, and good luck with the removal of the Ernest Borgnine tattoo. Maybe that's happening at some other time. If you see Brent, ask to see that.
You know, sure,
he loves to show it off. So what I wanted to talk about today, and this for me is really like therapy, getting a chance to come in here and just, I got all these thoughts in my head. I'm not here to change your mind about anything. I'm just here to empty mine of everything.
Right.
But there's two things that are kind of happening in our world that, and today's sponsored by the letter H, and that stands for health insurance, and that stands for homelessness. Two separate topics. We're going to get into both of them today. I kind of want to start out at the national level with both and then just start drilling down till we get to Salem and talk about how we're impacted in this area and what people out there in radio land need to be thinking about. And I know that our audience is worldwide. There are people tuning in from all over the planet. Online.
This is true.
And so there's some of this is going to, if you're in Kuala Lumpur today, this is going to help you in some way. You might be dealing with some of the same things, but really I want to get this back Salem Kaiser centric as we talk about some of these two issues. So health insurance has been a big deal for the last 20 years, and it's because it's only getting worse.
Right.
Everybody's seeing their costs going up. They're seeing their deductibles going up, their max out of pockets going up. And this renewal is no different. I mean, we're getting to the point where, you know, we're no longer seeing ridiculous increases, but after so many years of ridiculous increases, when you get a 5% increase in your premium, you're looking at a big number.
Right.
And when you're looking at your, in companies now are saying, well, we're only increasing our deductible 5% or your premium 5%, but your deductible is going from $2,000 to $2,500. Your max out of pocket is going from $6,500 to $7,900. Well, $7,900 is a lot of money for somebody. And if you have a bad year, coming up with $8,000, I mean, that's a huge chunk of change for folks out there. And I know right now, whoever is listening, there are bobbleheads everywhere. Their heads are just bobbing up and down. Mm-hmm. And yep, that's me. That's where we're at right now. And so you know, you start to dial it back, and people want to blame the insurance companies. And I know I'm an insurance agent, and if there's anybody who shouldn't trust an insurance company, it's me, because I got to work with them all the time. But insurance companies aren't honestly the ones to blame. And I think that a lot of times that's people's immediate anger, is because they're like, well, those jerks are, they're giving me this cost increase, and they're changing my deductible and my plan. They're making it worse. If Ross and Safeway and Fred Meyer all started charging $20 for a gallon of milk, you wouldn't blame them, right? You'd say, well, they're just resellers mm-hmm. of what the dairy is charging them. Like the dairy sells them the milk, and then they go out and they mark it up. And there's competition between them, and they don't have, they're all trying to sell more milk. So if somebody could sell it for a lot less, they would.
Right.
But they can't. Because the dairy is what's charging them, and they're just tacking on, you know, whatever service charge they have to add on there to cover their costs and make a little bit of profit.
I think you're facing the brunt of that for the health insurance costs, because you're in the front line.
Oh, it's that's the worst meeting in the world that you can have. I mean,
because you're accessible.
Is we're accessible. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're the ones. My favorite story to tell is there's a company that'll go nameless, and they used to pay 100% of their employee premiums.
I remember those days.
100% of the employee and all your dependents.
Yes. And those were good days.
Those were good days. And they had a fantastic plan. And every year at renewal, they do a big company party. Uh-huh. They'd invite the women, the children, the men. Everybody would come to this party. It was a huge, and it was a great deal where they talked about the benefits that they were providing their employees. And as costs began to grow and grow and grow, they decided, you know, this year we're going to have to cut back. We're going to go from paying 100% of the family premium to, we're going to pay 100% for employees and only 50% of the family premium. And so I knew this was a big sea change for them. And we, you know, we talked about it quite a bit. And they said, we still want you to come out to the employee party and still talk about health insurance and the benefits, and it'll be a good chance for the, you know, everybody to get up to speed on this. Well, I assumed that they were letting everybody know prior to me arriving for this celebration that they were changing this dramatic benefit. So I get there, and all the families are there, and it's my turn to go up and talk about the change in benefits. And like, as soon as right before I went out, the lady who was the owner of the company said, hey, I haven't told anybody anything yet. So when you get out there,
oh man,
one of the guys literally flipped over the table he was at when he found out and got in his truck and drove off. And I mean, the whole party was just downhill from there.
What a way to bring it down there, TJ.
Exactly. But that's really what's happening is, you know, we used to have those benefits. And as agents, we were going out. I mean, it was really bad. We were, you know, giving out 30% increases. And we have a vested interest. I mean, we really work for our clients as an insurance agent. And so you really want to help your people find the best deal. And we're getting to the point now. So Obamacare comes out. And Obamacare, the idea behind it was that it was going to fix everything. And the problem with how they approached it was, so the two biggest cost drivers to those of us that buy insurance privately, whether it's through, whether our employer buys it and gives it to us, or whether we go and we buy it direct from a company as an individual or a family, the two biggest cost drivers to that are Medicare and Medicaid, right? These are two huge national programs that don't pay doctors what they need. They don't pay hospitals what they need. So there's a massive cost shift onto the consumer by these two entities. And so Obamacare came out, and Obamacare said, look, we're going to give you a tax credit to help you purchase these individual plans. Okay? If they would have just stopped there, we probably would have been, we wouldn't have been as bad a shape as we are now. Because what they did with that is they said, in order to give these tax credits, we got to find some offsets. So one of the offsets is we're going to provide less to hospitals and doctors for the Medicare patients that they treat. So there was a massive downgrade in what hospitals were receiving from the federal government for Medicare. And they said, and we're also going to expand Medicaid so that more people can go on to this program, you know, nationally. And so what you did was you said, look, we're going to give a tax credit to help you afford these premiums, but then we're going to exacerbate the two things that are stressing the private healthcare market right now. And so it's sort of like if your check engine light came on, Obamacare would be like putting a piece of tape over it and saying, the problem's fixed. We're done. You don't need
even,
to...
Even though your car's running like crap.
Yeah, even though you're... Yeah. Even though, yeah. And so when that happened, all of a sudden, we were going back to Washington, D.C., and I remember meeting with Kurt Schrader, and he was 100% opposed to this. He understood what was driving up the cost, and he got pulled into Nancy Pelosi's office and was browbeaten into supporting this.
Wow.
And so we can get... We'll talk about this in the next segment about drilling down into Salem and what's happening here that's going to impact our rates. But it's interesting to see how these decisions were made at the federal level and then how they're affecting our area. And our governor has a hand in this. Our hospital has a hand in this. All these things are at work here. And us as consumers have to start voicing some concerns. We got to do it with our vote, but we also have to do it with our pocketbook as well.
Absolutely. This is Newsmakers. TJ Sullivan sitting in for Brent today and tomorrow. I'm Dave Bourne. We'll be back on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. And welcome back to Newsmakers on this Monday. TJ Sullivan, he's the president of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, is sitting in for Brent today and tomorrow. And today we're talking about healthcare and homelessness. Right now we're continuing with healthcare. So what about the mandate that was in the Obamacare that everybody was going to get taxed? What happened with that?
Well, I mean, there was a Cadillac tax that was put in there. There was also another tax that was put on plans, and those were, both of those plans quickly got changed.
Because we all voiced our opinion on that, right?
Exactly.
The backlash into Washington was huge.
Well, you know how politics makes strange bedfellows. Mm-hmm. You had, you know, different entities that are typically on the opposing end of things. You know, a lot of unions have... So they put Obamacare in place. By the way, it was really amusing when you were back there in D.C. If you were seeing a Republican, you had to refer to it as Obamacare, and if you were seeing a Democrat, you had to refer to it as the Affordable Care Act.
What?
I don't know what would happen to you if you would have slipped and used it in the wrong office, but. That was what we were always told when we were back there lobbying was mm-hmm. be careful who you're with because they're sensitive to what you call it, which just should make everyone's head hurt. But you had when they passed it, they were afraid that they thought that all the fat cats on Wall Street would be the ones with these really rich benefit plans, and that by taxing those really rich benefit plans that you would collect a bunch of taxes from the fat cats on Wall Street and it would help to offset what middle America was having to pay. Uh-huh. In reality, it was the unions that have the really rich benefit plans, and they were the ones getting the huge tax bill on that. So they quickly started lobbying. And then you had a lot of our association, the National Association of Health Underwriters, and you had the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they were looking at it from what families were getting hit with on the back end of their family plans. And saying it doesn't make any sense to give a family a tax credit to afford a plan that you're adding a tax on.
Yeah.
And so they listened to that and they did away with those. And recently, President Trump did away with the mandate that you have to have health insurance. You no longer have to buy health insurance or get penalized. You can choose to roll without it.
Yeah.
If something happens in the middle of the year, you have to wait though until the next open enrollment period and the next 1-1 enrollment date in order to sign up, unless you move. You have to change counties or lose your job or other things like that. And then there's some qualifiers that you can jump on in the middle of the year.
Just a quick little note. back when I was in the 20s to early 30s, I did not have health care.
Yeah.
Because I worked part-time. I didn't have health care. It wasn't offered to me, and I couldn't afford it. So right. I didn't have it. And nothing, thankfully, knock on wood somewhere, I didn't have anything catastrophic happen to me. But still.
Well, and even our uninsured population, even with having Obamacare in place, the percentage of our population that is uninsured really hasn't changed. So you put this into place, and it's been this huge cost driver that's absolutely hammered our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And actually made the problems worse. And here in the state, one of the, so that Medicaid expansion that I talked about earlier, we had a decision to make as a state. Not every state decided to increase the Medicaid expansion. So it went from being at 180% of the federal poverty level, they increased it. If you were within 400% of the federal poverty level, you went on to Medicaid, which here in Oregon we know as the Oregon Health Plan.
Right.
So you had a decision to make as a state, and a lot of states jumped at the opportunity, including Oregon. And I remember Rick Perry, who was then the governor of Texas, got absolutely skewered for not expanding his state's Medicaid. And at the time, I was like, well, you do realize, I mean, they border a country that has a different economic situation than ours.
Right.
And so if you begin to increase this, they could come over. I mean, he could be overwhelmed in that state. And you have to think about it, because what happened in the state of Oregon was the federal government said, listen, we'll print money and we'll pay for this Medicaid expansion for you states that come on for a few years. And then after a few years, you're on your own. And that's what's happened in this state. That's why all of a sudden you've been hearing a lot of this budget crisis in the state of Oregon, is because we took the money. It's like going out and getting a credit card and saying, listen, for the first 48 months, you don't have to pay anything. But after 48 months, you're on the hook for the whole enchilada.
Mm.
And so all of a sudden in the state of Oregon, we had this $1 billion shortfall that we're looking at. And the only way we can make it up is in increased taxes. So we're not getting anything for all these increased taxes that we're facing. We're not getting anything for it, really.
Right.
It's just
to maintain what we have.
It's just to maintain what we have.
Oh,
and
wow.
They're talking about lower class sizes, and they're saying it's really just to pay for, to pick up our tab for this Medicaid expansion. And Texas, on the other hand, is looking pretty sweet, and their healthcare costs are a lot lower than ours are because they didn't go through and they didn't make this expansion. And when you can have lower healthcare costs, more people can afford to buy it. You don't need a tax credit. You don't need Medicaid to be at 400% of the poverty level. And so you begin to see how the decisions that were made at the state level are starting to impact us, you know, at the local level. Similarly, you're looking at Salem Health. Salem Health is probably the single biggest cost driver on our health insurance in Salem, right? They're the only hospital. They own a lot of clinics in town. They own a lot of specialists in town. And so they really are the single biggest cost driver. So the beauty of Salem is we pretty much know each other. It's like, you know, that game, like 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Right.
You can play that game in Salem, and you could be like, I wonder who's on the board of trustees at Salem Health. And you're probably like 3 degrees away from knowing somebody who's on that. And I think that it's important that we understand who these people are, because they're helping to guide our hospital here. And if we're going to have a fix, our hospital has to be run really prudently. And I think Cheryl Nestor Wolf and her team down there at Salem Health are doing a really good job. But that can change at a moment's notice. And it's really incumbent upon us that we know actually who is on this board for Salem Health. And that might be something I'll put on the Facebook page for the station, so that if people are interested in it, that they can find out who these people are, because the decisions they make are going to directly impact the cost of our healthcare. Another interesting little facet that just came about here in the last couple legislative sessions, there was a bill that got introduced, and the governor signed it, and it said that hospitals can only charge state employees on their health plan 200% of what Medicare charges. So just to give you an idea of how little Medicare pays hospitals. It would be a cost savings to all of the state employees if hospitals and doctors could only charge them 200% of what Medicare charges. So here in Salem, we got a lot of folks who work for the state.
Yep.
The hospital has to treat all these people. So now the hospital has to treat this increasing population that's on Medicare where they're not getting enough. They've got an expanded Medicaid population thanks to Obamacare. And now you've had all your state employees get all their services are now reduced to the hospital for what they collect. So the hospital is really operating on a shoestring, and they have to make improvements to deal with all the baby boomers who are coming online and needing more and more services at the hospital. So this next 10 years are going to be really tricky,
right?
For how we make it through. Now, here's the hope part of it. By the time those 10 years are over and all those improvements are made, our population is going to look dramatically different, right? Mm-hmm. We're not going to have as many baby boomers on Medicare. We're going to have more of my generation, the Gen Xers, and we're going to be kind of getting into that 55 to 60 category. But we're going to have all these millennials, and there's a gazillion millennials out there, and they're going to be paying into the system. And that's when we're going to start to see healthcare start to turn a corner, and we're going to start to see health insurance rates. So we got about 10 years of hopefully smart investments at Salem Health. We've got 10 years of hopefully a little government intervention, and this population shift is going to take care of a lot of problems that are on the horizon. So I know 10 years is a long time, but at the end of 10 years, I really do think we're going to start to see, and the market is also making some adjustments to help bring down rates and get coverage up. So I'm confident in those three things over the next 10 years. There's a reason to have some hope as it relates to health insurance.
Confidence is high.
Confidence will be high.
I mean, okay. 10 years.
10 years. That's all you gotta. I know you're in your car and you're going, well, this, thanks a lot. I was hoping for something a little sooner, like 10 months from now, but we're not quite there yet.
Hmm. I mean, we're looking at possibly retirement age for me.
Yeah. I mean, you don't look that old.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Now 56.
Oh, you didn't have to say that. Now everybody knows.
That's okay. I don't care.
Keep them guessing.
I don't care.
I didn't think you were supposed to share your age on air.
Eh.
I'm 39.
Yeah, and holding.
Yeah.
For many times over. All right. So coming up,
we're going to get into homelessness, which incidentally, for a certain segment of that population, the cost of health insurance and health-related catastrophes are what have driven them to the streets. But I want to talk about homelessness. We've got some interesting things happening here in the city, some interesting things happening nationally. And I really think that Salem has the potential to be at the forefront of the solution that a lot of other cities are facing.
Ooh, look forward to that on Newsmakers. TJ Sullivan is guest hosting for Brent today and tomorrow. We will have the mayor in tomorrow, by the way. Chuck will be here, and we can also talk a little bit about the homelessness. I'm Dave Bourne. Come right back to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem. And today and tomorrow on Newsmakers, guest host TJ Sullivan, a current president of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, joins us. And we just talked about healthcare. And now we're going to our second H of the hour.
Right.
Homelessness.
Homelessness. I just got to say real quick, you brought up Green Acres in the last segment. And
yeah.
We're heading into the holiday season. And I know there are too many people out there who are old like me, and they're 39, and they can't put up Christmas lights anymore.
Just
call Green Acres, and they will put up your Christmas lights for you. And it makes, I mean, in Salem in the wintertime, it'll bend you low because the sky is gray, and it feels like it's dark all the time. And when somebody puts up Christmas lights, it makes you just feel just that much better.
Did you know?
All doing it, it'll be awesome.
There's a new study that came out that said, if you feel like putting your Christmas lights up early, do it. Yeah. It'd make you a happier person.
Exactly. Unless just you like live vitamin in a place D. They got CCNRs where they don't like them up early. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I got that to deal with now.
Yeah. But there's always some cranky people out there that
always
want to just ruin your parade.
If you have a house on your own land, put up your lights if you feel like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
It's the holidays.
Heck, put up lights in somebody else's house. Really freak them out when they come home.
Start out with Halloween stuff right now.
Yeah.
And that the same colors travel into Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much. And then switch those colors out to the Christmas ones.
Yeah, you're done. This is easy.
It is easy.
Let's get festive. So homelessness. I don't think there's anywhere that you can go right now in this country where you don't see... way more homeless than what you would have seen 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Which is weird.
It is.
Because the economy's doing so well and everybody can get a job. So help me understand why homelessness is so big now.
Yeah, I mean, I think here in Oregon, I think nationally, I think you've seen a relaxing of the drug laws. And I think that as you've seen that relaxation, that you're seeing more people using as a result. And I think that it's that is contributing a lot to what we're seeing out there. I think in Oregon, we've made some bad decisions as it relates to drug use, as it relates to helping people who are mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's driving some of the issues here in our area. We had a chance, I'll never forget. So the state hospital was kind of reaching a critical point where we either needed to sell it, scrape it, and do something different, or we needed to make an investment into it. And so there was a lot of discussion in the state of Oregon about what we do with that property. And nationally, we're one of the few states that actually institutionalizes patients. And we're in a position where the feedback from the folks that were helping people who are mentally ill, they were saying, hey, look, institutionalizing them is super expensive and it's not cost efficient. Very few people need to actually be institutionalized. Most people who are dealing with some kind of a mental health issue, if they go into a period where they have an episode, they need a safe place to be temporarily while they can talk about what's going on, where they can get the right kind of medicine into them to help regulate the chemicals in their head. That's what they need. They don't need to be institutionalized. And what happens a lot of times is somebody goes through a mental health issue, and their family doesn't know how to deal with it, or they're tired of dealing with it. Their friends don't know how to deal with it, or they're tired of dealing with it. So ultimately, fewer people start to help that person who's mentally ill.
Right.
The cops are not mental health experts, right? They do receive training in how to interact with people who are in the middle of an episode, but they're not there to really solve the issue long-term or even solve the issue temporarily. And so you see them a lot of times, somebody will be going through a mental health issue. Family or friends will call the cops. Cops will come and get them. The person will be acting in a dangerous way to themselves or to others, and the cops will take them to the hospital, and usually they'll get sedated. And then when they get released, who's there to pick them up? You know, sometimes mm-hmm. family and friends get burned out and they can't deal with it anymore. So the fix at the state level was we should be building all of these community. We should be taking down the institutional model. We should be building community hospitals around the state so that if somebody in Pendleton, Oregon is dealing with a mental health issue, they don't end up in Salem, Oregon, somebody knocking on the state hospital's door going, do you have room for this person? Because right now it's at capacity, and right. they've tried to open up another one. But again, this is a huge cost driver, and we haven't had the money to run both of the two facilities at maximum strength. So you have a lot of people who are mentally ill who are not getting the help that they need. And there's some different, I've heard different accounts of what happened. But the one that I keep hearing about, the reason why we stuck with the institutional model was because the union for the state employees had gone to leadership in the House and the Senate and said, look, we don't want to move our people all over the state. They're content. They're happy living here in Salem, Oregon. If you go around and build these community facilities around the state, it's really going to uproot a lot of lives, and it would be better for them if we just kept this model here and kept doing what we're doing here. As a result, you begin to see, I mean, we really are not in a position to handle the needs of the folks who are mentally ill in our facility. And Salem Health is absorbing a lot of them, and they would be, they're working to help find some of the fixes to help folks who are on the streets who are mentally ill. So the, in Oregon, that's really contributed, and in Salem, that's contributed to our population here, some of which is mentally ill. The bulk, though, and I've said this before, and it's true not just here, it's true down in Eugene, it's true in Portland, it's true in San Francisco, it's true in Seattle. If you keep calling it a homelessness problem, then you're not really identifying the main culprit. If you say that this is an addiction problem, now all of a sudden you're starting to identify what the help might be that these folks need, what the solution might be. Because if somebody's addicted and that's driving their homelessness, then just finding them shelter is not going to necessarily fix the issue.
True.
And the new buzz phrase is wraparound housing. If we can find housing with wraparound services, this is going to be our way of solving this issue. Right now in Salem, I think we have like 1,300 people who are chronically homeless. That seems to me to be a number that we can fix. And so we started a lot, there's a lot of dialogue that's happening. One with how do we go about providing this wraparound housing? What does that look like? How much does it cost? And the second piece that we're looking at is how is this affecting businesses? What are businesses doing? And then the third piece to this is really what are the nonprofits in our area? What are they doing and how can they do a better job at doing it to meet the needs of this population? And I believe that, so we came out first with there was a no sit lie ordinance.
Right.
And I went down to City Hall with some other local business people and we were gonna testify on it. And then there was a whole bunch of people that were there for another topic, but they all testified on the no sit lie. And all the business people got terrified to say anything about it. And so they all decided to pass on their testimony and that no sit lie went down. But as you talk to people out in the community, everybody is saying that we need to do something to prevent people from sleeping on city sidewalks, in the middle of doorways downtown to get in and out of businesses. And that sounds very harsh to say, but in a lot of respects, we're not helping them by allowing them to continue to be there. We need to find a better place for them to be than sleeping there. And I, for businesses' sake, and it's funny because we just had a forum and there were certain people that were in the audience that were trying to cast business owners in some horrible light that because we own a business, we don't have a right to have our property respected. And we don't have, and we're just greedy if we're not willing to let somebody sleep in our doorways or desecrate our property. And they acted as if that those things never happen. But as I've been downtown talking to fellow business owners, everybody's got a story. Mm-hmm. That would just blow your mind about what's happened and how, and psychologically that people say, gosh, if that happens to me or I hear about that, that makes me less likely to go downtown. That makes me less likely to spend my money in Salem. I'll go to the Woodburn Outlet Mall where they don't have this issue and I'll spend my money there. And so as a business owner in downtown Salem, who we're all cheering on saying, yeah, open these doors, make this investment, mortgage your future, and we'll support you, right? Passing this is really one step in saying, hey, listen, we get that it's hard, and we're going to remove one barrier to people coming down and shopping at your place. I know that Tyler Jackson from Jackson Jewelers got up and spoke at one of these forums, and he relayed what his family's gone through and what their customers have gone through and the difficulties that they've had. And he actually got targeted by somebody who is a known quantity in our homeless population here. They have a video of this gentleman picking up a rock, walking down the street, passing by a bunch of windows until he got right to Jackson Jewelers. And then we went up and started scratching words into the glass at Jackson's.
Wow.
And you know, I don't know how much, I haven't talked to Tyler to get the follow up on how much damage was done, but it's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Wow.
Simply because he decided to speak up and just say, hey, look, this is affecting my business. And Jackson Jewelers has been a key part of our downtown for a lot of years. And it's disappointing when you see that that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the sit lie went, you know, it was almost unanimous, I think. It might have been 7-2 or 6-3, but when that went away, I thought, well, now we're really in trouble. And the situation has gotten worse, and you're starting to hear more downtown business owners reaching out to their city councilors and saying, hey, look, you've got to do something differently. And again, to the people who are listening, if this is something that you're seeing and you're saying, hey, listen, yeah, this is an issue, I've been affected this way. There's a new ordinance that's coming. It's the sidewalk behavior ordinance. And the reason there's some legal ramifications about why we think that a no sit lie would be found unconstitutional. So the new proposed sidewalk behavior ordinance would just limit the times that people can be sleeping in downtown. It's like from 9 p.m. till 6 a.m. you can be sleeping in downtown on a sidewalk, but the rest of the time you have to be up, and it's no longer allowed to sit or lie in downtown. They're still having some listening sessions on it to get more feedback from the community. But if you're out there and you're listening, you're like, yeah, I agree. There should be, like, during the day and at night, I don't feel safe, or you know, this is definitely a deterrent to me going downtown. You should email the city council. It's citycouncil@cityofsalem.net. And they'll all get the email. And I would encourage you to let them know if you feel strongly about this, one way or the other, I guess, for that matter. But if you feel strongly that this is something that you're in favor of, that you would encourage them to support it.
Absolutely. And we'll talk more about homelessness coming up. TJ Sullivan is guest hosting for Brent DeHart today and tomorrow. I'm Dave Bourne. This is Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. Joining us as guest host today, T.J. Sullivan. He's the president and of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce. Reinstated again. You could have said no, right?
It's like the mob. They keep sucking me back in.
Sucking you back. Yeah. How many times is this now?
This is my second time.
Oh.
So there's only a few of us, I found out, that are dumb enough to have done it more than once. And so Jerry Frank is one of them. So that was something that made me feel a little bit better about the second time. Was,
oh, okay.
Anytime you're mentioned in the same company as Jerry Frank,
well, you then you're in pretty good company.
This is kind of interesting about Jerry Frank. He actually has a thank you note written to him by Mother Teresa.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. At the point in time that Mother Teresa is writing you a thank you note, like, that means you've lived a pretty good life. So,
no kidding.
Yeah. And Mother Teresa, I mean, she, her model, right? She was taking care of the people that were the hardest to love in her area.
Mm-hmm.
And in our area, we just talked about, for lack of a better term, I would say is the stick, right? If you're gonna sit or lie in downtown Salem during the hours that it's not allowed, the police are gonna be involved. That's the stick in all of this. The carrot, though, is that there are a lot of nonprofits in our area who are there to help these folks who are homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And they are making great strides. We've been meeting as a group, and I'm a business owner, but I'm interested in what they're doing. I want to see them succeed. And so whatever role I can play in helping them connect and having a discussion about what do we need to do. So if we're a business owner, if I own a restaurant in downtown Salem, and someone comes into my restaurant and starts walking up to my patrons and asking them for their food on their plate or taking the food on their plate.
Wow.
What do I do?
Right.
I don't want to call the cops necessarily, or maybe I do. Maybe that's excessive. I don't know. What do I? So we're trying to work with these nonprofits to put together kind of a scenario that we can hand out, not just to even to downtown business owners, but to patrons, to say, if this is happening, then this is what you can do. And coordinating the work of these nonprofits so that the ones that specialize in mental health can be helping the ones that specialize in addiction. I think eventually we need to kind of get to the point where we build a HIPAA certified database of all of our customers mm-hmm. who are in, and by customers, I mean folks who are homeless in our community, so that we can coordinate the service and the care that they're getting and figure out where we need to place them. Not everybody is an out-of-work contractor, you know, who's down on their luck. I mean, there's a lot of people who've got serious addiction issues that they need some help with. And it's also working with the nonprofits to say, hey, listen, we know you care. What you're doing is enabling rather than transforming. We want to get to a place where we're transforming, because what you're doing is you're helping them kill themselves.
Right.
So we need to kind of help you change that tactic and coordinate it so that we're making the right investments. I'm amazed at how many great nonprofits we have in our area that are ready to jump in and help with this. The meetings that we've had so far have been absolutely fantastic. And there's two gentlemen in particular, and we'll have to get them on at some point to do another show. They're two guys. I think that I don't think they were friends before when they were both on the street, but they were both on the street. They both have a history of addiction. They came to faith through the Union Gospel Mission. They got their lives turned around, and now all they want to do is help the folks who are on the street. And they're passing out their cards to people who are in downtown Salem.
Nice.
Who are business owners, and they're working with them to do everything they can to help them. So when you have a situation with somebody and you're a downtown business owner, you can call them and they'll get there and they'll help that person figure out where they need to get them. That's a level of care that a lot of us aren't built with. And the fact that it's happening in Salem, I think is going to be a great start and a great show. First step is going to be to pass the sidewalk behavior ordinance at the city council level. We pass that there, that's step one. And then step two is continuing to integrate our nonprofits into a cohesive unit where they're working to address it. And I really believe we're going to create a model here in Salem that other municipalities are going to look at and say, if we can replicate that, we can help to positively change the trajectory of these lives of the folks who are homeless in our community.
Definitely help needed for sure. TJ Sullivan, president of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, guest hosting today for Brent. He'll be in again tomorrow.
I feel better already.
I'm Dave Bourne. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.